CliffCentral.com.
Cunns, the guys have got you, girl, and don't you know? Very nice. It's Thursday. It's 11 after, or 12 after 7, to be precise. And it's time for us to check out the burning platform, as we do every Thursday. Don't forget, a little bit later on, porn star Jessica Drake will pop in, along with another porn star called Tanya Tate. The reason I want to talk to Jessica Drake is because she is the 11th Trump accuser. So that's going to be exciting. And Tanya is a MILF of the year, Ben, 9 times in a row.
That's amazing.
That's quite an achievement.
Did she get that? Was her first award after she gave birth? I mean, was it in that calendar year?
I don't know. We'll have to ask her.
There's so many questions.
So many questions. And we'll have to ask Jessica about how Donald's tiny little orange hands tried to feel her up. It's pretty disturbing on any level. All right. You wanted to say something?
If she's 11, how many are there? Or is it like a Bill Cosby case where it's like infinity?
There could be so many. And you could thank Anderson Cooper for setting this up and opening it up for any girl who wanted to say that Donald Trump had felt her up to come forward. And why the hell not? You know, the more the merrier. It's time for the burning platform. And Gwen Gwenya's here. We've spoken to Gwen before. How are you, Gwen? Are you well?
Fantastic this morning. Thanks, Gary.
Good. It's nice to see you again. The last time we spoke to you, we talked about a whole bunch of things. There's so much more every other week. Justice isn't here today. He'll be back next week. But we thought, you know what? Another excuse to get you in. Why the hell not? So you've been paying attention to the news. First of all, what do you think of Pravin's medium-term budget speech, the little budget?
I mean, you've just had a really long session on that already. But, I mean, I think that he said the things that he needed or everyone was looking to hear from the minister. But I think some of us are still a bit disappointed on the things that were left out. For example, you know, this was a very sort of standard speech in terms of making sure that investor confidence, investors are sure that, you know, our fiscal expenditure is under control, et cetera. But there was very little talk about some of the promises that were made in February. For example, reforms in the state-owned entities. So he only touched on the sort of governance issues, saying that, you know, that appointed a board for SAA and that, you know, et cetera, and that the post office and Eskom.
And but SABC.
Exactly. But there wasn't much talk about the operational side, which I think is also, you know, what people look at and are very concerned about, is how these you know, agencies' operations are going. So I think that was left out. And then, of course, everyone's been mentioning structural reforms. I do realize this is not a budget speech, so it's perhaps not the time to make, you know, big sort of visionary statements, but I think South Africa needed some kind of direction as well from the minister, and not these really short-term outlooks. So I think our concern is just about the ratings agencies and only looking at South Africa and what's happening in December, what's happening in the next 2 years. But I think we need to start looking a bit further out and thinking.
Well, I think that he's probably at the back of his mind. He's got this this bugging him. Is that
yes.
The revenues are getting smaller and smaller, and expenses are getting bigger and bigger.
Yes.
And that's not a good place to be. That's like living beyond your means on an individual
sense. Yes, but at the end of the day, I get the feeling from the budget, you know, that you're just taking from Peter to feed Paul, as, you know, that saying goes, and not really much is being said about how to grow the pie instead of just taking from one place and plugging it into another.
Well, maybe they just don't know how.
Well, I mean, they've suggested tax increases, which are not going to please everyone, but at least the consensus, or at least just the rumor seems to be that it's unlikely to come from personal income tax. I mean, there's many other tax areas they're looking at. There's the obviously controversial sugar tax. There's the VDP that they announced earlier in the year.
What's that?
That's the voluntary disclosure program that SARS announced, basically allowing any companies, individuals with foreign assets and income who haven't yet declared them to do so. And I think that's a period in order to obviously avoid any kind of charges.
Oh, right.
And that's been opened up from now in October. I think it's until June 2017.
Well, that'll bring in some money.
Well, at least they're hoping that it will. We'll see. So it's that, and there's also the carbon tax that's being floated as well. So I think there are some areas they're trying to get extra revenues from without, you know, looking at VAT, and which is obviously also deeply unpopular, or raising income taxes.
I think a lot of politicians just don't know how business works. And even educated people and people who really do know how economies work aren't entirely sure how money's produced. Like, they don't understand the basics of supply and demand. And maybe that's why it's very difficult for them to put together cogent, sensible fiscal policy, in terms of how you've got to balance this growth, taxation, welfare situation. It's very much more complicated than I think a lot of people understand.
Well, and because the majority of the public don't understand, I think that's also what pushes governments to make popular decisions, you know, things that people will understand. So people do understand when you increase taxes, value-added tax, because all that affects ultimately it streams, you know, gets
everyone,
trickles down to the consumer and people feel it. So that's why they try to avoid those more obvious areas where people do hurt.
But is there are we squeezing, for example, the middle class in South Africa to a point where they're
I think so, definitely. And as I was saying, that is why the lack of sort of indication about where we're headed in terms of structural reforms is quite disappointing. It seems that the age-old line seems to be, well, we need to get implementation right, but we've been saying that since forever. The problem is not the NDP, it's just implementation. I think they need to start singing a different tune now, or at least giving it more detail as to what exactly isn't going right and maybe what different tactics are we going to use in order to achieve the overall strategy. But there was very little in this midterm in a policy statement. But as I said, I think people expect that because that's what it is. It's a kind of, you know, stock-taking exercise. You know, you gave your main sort of vision in February, and now it's the time to say, well, where are we with those plans? Do we need to make changes in order to achieve the goals that we had set? I suppose it's not really a time to set, you know, new strategy and new vision. So we probably will hear more about that in February next year.
When Pravin was at SARS, he was very good at getting a lot of money out of people. I mean, he was good at shaking the average taxpayer to the point where he knew exactly how much you had and how much you were giving, and he would work out the difference. Tom Moyane is now in charge at SARS, and a lot of people are saying he's really part of Jacob Zuma's network of patronage in some way, shape, or form. They can't quantify it yet, but certainly he doesn't seem to be over the moon about, you know, these investigations that Sean Abrams is taking part in. He doesn't seem to be hugely supportive of Pravin Gordhan, the two of them. One wants to get rid of the other. Do you think that SARS is maybe not doing as good a job as it could to bring in tax revenues?
No, I mean, every reason, I mean, from at least what Pravin was saying from the policy statement was that revenue seemed to be rather, I think, a reflector of just the depressed economy and perhaps even people losing jobs, etc., because there's actually... we've managed to do quite well in terms of the collection of corporate taxes. The revenue shortfall largely came from less personal income tax than was expected. So that's a cause for concern. But I think on the corporate side, they're doing quite a good job. And I, at least on the personal income tax, I haven't read anything that seems to suggest that it was a failure of revenue collection, but rather simply that I suppose people had fewer taxes to file than was originally expected.
Okay, there's lots of political stuff to talk about too, but I did notice that during the speech, the president was asleep. Is that because he's just exhausted from all those court cases that he's embroiled in?
I don't know. It's just really not acceptable. I mean, even Robert Mugabe at the best of times sometimes manages to stay awake. He, of course, falls asleep quite often too, but the man is at least, I'm sure, two decades older than
the president. So what's his excuse?
Exactly.
What do you think the best case scenario in this whole state capture investigation is, and what do you think the most dangerous scenario is?
Well, I suppose the best case scenario is that it's revealed publicly and that we can all see what the public protectors or the institution has come up with and that we all get to read it. I suppose that's the best case scenario. As far as the worst case is, if the DA's sort of concerns that Mkhwebane is just another agent, you know, for the Gupta family, then we have great reason to be concerned. That report is likely never to come to light, and probably more activities are likely to appear under the carpet.
That's
definitely concerning.
Yeah, and then we'll never really know the full extent of it unless a full-scale investigation is brought to.
Yes. Or I suppose if there are any other whistleblowers, either from Fakie Mentor, who have more to say and perhaps can shed more light without the report being... Because I assume in order to compile the report, there would have been extensive interviews done. And I don't see why those people need a report to necessarily make it public knowledge what they know. They could just come forward, go to the media and tell them the exact same thing they've told the public protector or the former public protector.
And we're seeing one or two people in business coming forward, Sipho Pityana and people like that, who are saying, you know, to hear and no further.
Yes.
Declaring for a side.
I suppose rather late than never, but I'm really not one to pat the likes of Sipho Pityana or, you know, Trevor Manuel on the back for suddenly now growing some backbone. It's been a long time coming. I mean, I suppose, as I said, better late than never.
Yeah.
But I think we have to wonder why now. They probably feel it's now safe to do so. Political allegiances have shifted enough for them to start probably hedging their bets for the next election. And it's all just about maneuvering and, you know, people securing favor with the next crowd that's likely to be in charge.
How about the Fees Must Fall movement? Where are we at there? I mean, you've also been watching that closely.
Yes. I'd gained a bit of confidence last week, or sort of early, late last week, when the Vice Chancellor of Wits had said that he's now doing away with the curfew, because the whole weekend there had been sort of, you know, was quite silent and no protest activity. Well, he spoke a bit too soon. I think it was Monday or Tuesday morning where that Wits bus was then set alight with apparently 15 students still inside.
Wow.
Just absolutely shocking. So I think just when you think things might starting to cool down, something flares up again. So I'm not sure. I'm not very hopeful anymore. There seems to be no end in sight. Also, the fake outrage, you know. I was watching another video of these students hoarded on top of a police van. And, of course, the van's kind of moving slowly, but then all of a sudden it grinds to a halt. And, well, you know, science, which they don't believe in, the law of inertia forces the one student colliding onto the pavement, because what happens when you're in a car and it suddenly stops, you fly forward, you know.
So they were outraged?
So he smashes into the ground, obviously, and he's... You know, he's lying there, but obviously it's quite a big one. I don't know what they call it, those big police, kind of look like army tanks, but it's written, you know, they're not army.
Either a Casper or Nyana.
Yes, exactly.
Things, yeah.
So he then starts driving again. I mean, I assume either the police don't know that he hasn't moved out of the way, or maybe they do and they're just angry. But of course, then the crowd starts screaming because he's now about to be run over by this massive vehicle. I mean, then the video cuts there, but the comment section is kind of, you know, this demonstrates the violence of the police. But my initial thought is, what were they doing on top of the police vehicle in the first place? You know, I mean, it's kind of this, you know, provoked outrage where I come and slap you. And then as soon as you're about to retaliate, somebody takes a video and it's like, you know, terrible Gareth, how could he, you know, retaliate against Gwen? But I mean, I've just slapped you. So, yes, it's terribly frustrating. I think a lot of them are getting, you know, they just deserves, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm always curious to see what this must look like to students on the inside who aren't particularly interested in politics. And
yes.
Students who aren't really motivated to do anything but get their degree.
Yes. You know,
like in the science department, or the engineering department, or any of those departments where they're not particularly... It's always the BA students who are up in arms, right? Because they've got nothing really to do. Their course isn't a very serious one. Most of the time they're studying poetry and bullshit. So they get out there.
Well, I think that's why. They spend their lives, you know, reading about Marx and the revolution, and they start to see the real world as, like, this is now the tangible manifestation of what they only used to have in their textbooks. And... You know, science students, what's in their textbooks is real. You know, you actually get to fiddle with the Bunsen burner and, like, pour around chemicals. Political students almost never actually get a taste of political life. So I think for them, this is, you know, the theory manifests in real life, basically.
There might also be one other thing that we need to address here, and that is that a lot of these students have grown up without any real meaningful struggle. Like, their parents took part in a real struggle.
Exactly.
Right? And there's struggle envy. It's
yes.
Like, how do I fit into the world?
Yes.
What's my
envy
thing?
Envy and nostalgia, exactly.
Yeah. So if I want to matter in the world, I have to do what the previous generation did. But who am I going to fight against? Max Price at fucking UCT?
Yes. They imagine themselves so incredibly oppressed. And, you know, they think the scenario is, you know, quite unique, but...
And they forget they're among the top 3% of the world's, of the country's population.
Exactly.
Who are actually privileged enough to go to university.
Exactly.
Regardless of what you can afford.
And there's no sort of comparative analysis that goes on. I mean, in the UK in 2010, they had student protest there. The police response was absolutely brutal. I mean, at least in numbers, at least at every one of those protests, you'd get, you know, 2,000, you know, thousands of police officers. You know, they'll sort of kettle the crowd. I think this, the method called kettling, where they surround the crowd and ensure that they're enclosed to one area. So if they're in one street of, you know, in town, they would kind of come from both ends, you know, thousand strong groups of police officers, and just block them, and they would not be able to move for hours on end. But I think it's just the sheer force and perhaps organization of the police in the UK. I'm not sure if ours, if we would be able to deploy that many bodies on the ground to do that kind of thing.
I also don't know that our police know how to deal with civil protests.
Well, I'm a lot more sympathetic towards them, because I think when you have the numbers, you can control a crowd without becoming too physical and too violent. As I say, if you have a group of 50 protesters, or let's say even 100 or 200 protesters, but you at least have a 2,000 strong police presence, then of course they can contain them. But when the number of police officers match the number of students, I think sometimes it becomes difficult to contain the crowd without being violent, without making use of rubber bullets, which, by the way, have always been, they're very creation was as sort of riot weapons. So I'm not sure why there's this narrative in South Africa that they represent an absolute, you know, excessive or use of force.
No, but everything when, to the left, everything is violence.
Yes. That's
words
true.
Of violence.
Words are violent. Yes. So rubber bullets are.
you're dealing with a moronic ideology. All right, let's talk quickly about a very important thing that's going to be happening. The New Age newspaper is holding another one of its breakfasts. And this time they have the following people, and maybe you can comment on one or two of them as credible people to comment on the goings-on in society at the moment. There's James Aguma, Hladi Motsoeneng, Dr. Aaron Chidzumba, and Mzwanele Mani, as well as Andile Mkutama. Would you go to this breakfast?
I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with propaganda as long as you know that it's propaganda. So,
yeah.
Yes, it's a heavily, yes, one-sided debate or discussion that will be, quite clearly.
Sounds great. I mean, I can't wait for my invitation. It's going to be terrific. That's on Morning Live on SABC.
You're quite optimistic that you'll receive one.
Oh, sure. I don't know why they wouldn't have me on the panel. I fit with all those people. All right, Gwen, thank you very, very much. As always, interesting to talk to you about the stuff that's going on in the world. Justice will be back next week, but we really appreciate you standing in for him this morning on The Burning Platform.
Thank you.
Very
great
cool.
To be here.
The Burning Platform every Thursday is brought to you by Nando's. Coming up in a short while, we'll check in on some of the news stories that Mubs hasn't got a chance to cover with us yet. Ben will tell us what's up in the sport. We'll take your calls. And then we've got very interesting guests on at 8, who I think you'll want to hear from. Porn star Jessica Drake, who's one of the Trump accusers, and Tanya Tate, who's also 9-time MILF of the Year in the Adult Video Network Awards. Very, very exciting. All of those and more. You're excited to hear them too, right?
Very.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
Do you want to be the next First Lady of the Touchdown?
Touch Central is looking for the First Lady of the Touchdown. Simply download the Touch Central app. Send us a message through the Touch Central app. And listen in every day between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday from the 4th of October till the 4th of November 2016. For more T's and C's, go to the Touch Central website. TouchCentral.fm.
Yeah. It's 26 minutes to 8. Let's check in with Mubs and see what's going on in the headlines. Mabale, what do you have for us?
Well, seemingly there's been some confusion on whether or not the public protector's report on state capture was final, which is why the president filed his reply yesterday regarding the application to stop the release of the report. He invited the new public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, to clarify whether this report was final, and indeed it is.
Hmm.
The president also argued that he had only become an implicated person in this investigation on the 2nd of October, and maintains that he wasn't given the opportunity to review the witnesses who had given evidence to Thulima Donsela. And then I don't know if you've already made up your mind about the new public protector, because people have already taken sides. But Julius Malema has, you know, he said that at the very least we should give her a chance. You know, some people have been critical of her brand new Twitter account where one of her tweets was a psalm, like quoted one of the psalms from the mm-hmm. Bible, which, you know, people took issue with because I don't know why. And, you know, other people are saying it was very suspicious that the new public protector, as soon as she moved into office, her immediate focus was on the indiscretions of the old public protector, which is why she, you know, again, brought up that whole investigation regarding Thuli Madonsela's son and the supposed car that he crashed, blah, blah, blah. So people have already taken sides with regards to what their opinion on the new public protector. And Julius has said, everybody hang on. The least we can do is give this woman a chance. He said, I think we should give her a chance. She is inheriting an institution. And even if she made commitments to the president and friends that she will work for them in the public protector office, she is going to be exposed. Malema went on to say that she would be the first public protector not to finish her term in office if she engages in any shenanigans.
Hmm. So he's giving us a guarantee.
No, he's not giving us a guarantee. He's saying that we should wait and see, and that if she does prove to be an ally of President and Co., you can count on the EFF to make a hell of a lot of noise about it and to set in motion a process to get her removed from the office.
All right. Sounds very exciting. Look, I'm going to withhold my judgment, so I think the right thing to do is just give her a chance to get stuck into the job. She's hardly been there a week, and we're already busy saying that we think she's X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
You know, give her a chance. And if she's terrible, we'll very quickly find out. We'll very quickly figure out what her credibility is. So let's give her a chance. At least a few weeks. All right, Sifred says, Gareth, you have to get Lucas to do a DJ Fresh laugh. Apparently that's what he can do. This is interesting. Lindsay says, why should the president care about the budget speech when he has Gupta money? Just saying. And Craig says, only give the president a bucket of KFC after parliament, not before. Everyone knows that you get sleepy on KFC. Just make sure that there's a barista at his aide filling him up the way he likes it. And Jocelyn says, Rhodes is on fire. Tennis club was burnt down. Alec Mullins, a huge exam venue, was damaged. Horrific violence. I'm stressed. Students are being held hostage by a tiny minority of thugs. This is not a civil protest anymore. That's what's going on at Rhodes at the moment. Roman says Gwen is obviously captured by white monopoly capital. So don't believe a word she says. All right. Any other comments can come to us on 0861-555-189. Let us know what's going on with you and what's on your mind. Let's go to Ben, who has emerged from a brief coughing fit to give us a look at what's going on in sport. Yes, Ben, over to you.
Clear at the WGC HSBC Champions.
How many?
That is too much. They must change it.
Basically, a big bank has sponsored the World Golf Championship this week. There's four of these events over the year. And it's a really big deal because 8 of the world's top 10 players are there. 19 of the 24 Ryder Cup players are there. 40 of the world's top 50 players are there. It's a big deal, right? It's just a massive deal. So currently leading is Daniel Berger and Ricky Fowler on 6.
Just hang on. It's the HSBC
WGC.
No, come on.
In Shanghai, China.
It's a joke.
No, it's not. It's a big money event. You win this, you're set for life. If you make the cut, you got a pretty good week. So basically, two Americans leading it, but Dean Burmester, he's South Africa's big chance in this leaderboard straight away. 4 under par, just 2 back, which is a really big deal for Dean. So that will be in China the whole weekend. So it's nice late morning, midday kind of golf, actually, from about 7 a.m. in the morning.
Okay, well right. That's convenient for a lot of people who
very convenient,
hate
yes.
watching golf at 3 in the morning because it's in America.
I know, that sucks.
Yeah. All right.
In motorsports, the Mexican Grand Prix this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So Rosberg could kind of win it if Hamilton's car bursts into flames, which has happened before. But he's playing this down, of course. So the gap between them is at the moment, Rosberg's in 331 points, Hamilton 305. Gareth, that equals? Correct, 26 points. So with just 3 races to go, this Mexican Grand Prix is going to be as hot as the tamales in the crowd. I'll tell you that much. The track actually goes through the stadium at some stage. It's really quite something.
Oh, yeah.
It's the shortest track on the circuit, so look for lots of thrills and spills. In cricket news, SA, the Proteas continue to warm up very well. They're playing South Australia at the moment. 261 for 5, with Faf du Plessis and Dean Elgar both getting centuries before retiring, so someone else can have a chance. India are disappointing their fans once again by just sort of, well, crumbling without Virat Kohli making 100. So now the 5 ODI series against New Zealand is going to the decider on Saturday. New Zealand drew level 2-2 yesterday with a 19-run win. And this week we'll see the return of England and Bangladesh, that great rivalry of Test cricket. Looks like Stuart Broad will be sitting that one out. Last night, IAS Cape Town lost again in the PSL. They haven't won in the PSL so far. So they have played 6, they've drawn 2, and they've lost 4. Now, Sundowns, who have been in all kinds of tournaments, they've played only 1 match in the PSL so far this season. So they'll get back on the board here. But the one we're all waiting for, Saturday, 3:30 SA time, tabletopping Kaizer Chiefs will play Orlando Pirates. It's going to be bloody exciting. But I'll get more into the whole fixes and things next tomorrow as the weekend starts proper. English League action last night. West Ham beat Chelsea 2-1. And Man United, they managed to win a game, beating Man City. Tough times for Pep Guardiola. That's pretty much it for your sport today. A lot more coming tomorrow. Some good news about the weekend as well. Because, well, you know, with SA not being able to get a sponsor for the local T20 League, that's not a good story. The Player of the Year awards were an absolute farce. We need a much more positive Friday, and I'll bring you that tomorrow.
Okay, good. Something to look forward to. Thank goodness. All right, it is 19 minutes to 8. We'll check in on a couple of the stories you may have missed in the next while. We'll also play some games, have some fun, take your calls, messages to screen. We can do Twitter. All of that and more on the way. All right, so MKTO with Thank You. Thank you. I see Twitter have changed a rule, which is quite handy for a lot of people. I think it's a big deal. They've decided that they're going to take out the usernames as part of the reply in the 140 characters. So in other words, you can write a longer reply without having to include that person's handle, especially if their handle is Ben Karpinski and Mabali Moloi on the Gareth Cliff Show.
Yeah, or 9 times North of the Year.
Right.
It's a long way.
It's a big thing. It's a whole thing. By the way, we've got the actual MILF of the Year, 9-time winner of the MILF of the Year popping by. Her name is Tanya Tate, also Jessica Drake. Lots to talk to her about in the next while. Flax, you've been doing some research around these two ladies. Hang on, let me just turn you on here. Hang on, I got the wrong... turn you on is probably not the right word either. Yes, Flax.
I'm not joking. These are two of the biggest porn stars in the entire world, on this world called Earth. These are the two biggest porn stars. If you've ever opened a browser, like a porn browser, you've seen them.
Yeah, definitely.
You might not recognize the name, but you've seen them.
No, we know their work, and we're very, very impressed. So for a lot of people who don't know yet, they'll be in a little bit later on. All right, there is some other stuff, though, that we need to talk about. Gerrit said, I had to Google the porn stars you mentioned. The one you said has won MILF of the Year is actually almost 10 years younger than the other one. Who would have thunk it? And Sifred says, Ben, you sound worse than Glenn in The Walking Dead. Go home.
Jeez, I sound worse than the guy being murdered with a baseball bat. That's perspective for you.
Yeah. All right. There are some other stories in the news, though, that we need to pay attention to. Mubs, do you want to take us through one or two of them?
Yeah, look, none of this is as exciting as the upcoming interview, but, you know, let's stomach our way through it. So as of November the 1st, you will be able to buy South Africa's very own Monopoly board.
Yay.
Okay. Let's have a look at some of the destinations that made it onto the board, because earlier this year, when Monopoly announced that they were planning on releasing a local board, they asked for a whole bunch of suggestions from people, and they received a lot. And so on the board, you will be able to find...
Mm-hmm.
Hang on. I need to find... Sorry,
so I went to the launch of this new Monopoly board.
Do you get you've been everywhere the last couple of days.
It was very cool, because what they did was they took us to places that were on the Monopoly board.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these places are in Johannesburg that you didn't even know. Like, it would be a bird watching place just off the Sandton Drive off ramp. Like, you would never know it was there.
Yeah.
And I know Maboneng was on there, so our first stop was Maboneng, and we went around there. A lot of places in Cape Town, like Franschhoek, was on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I saw like Camps Bay in that, but I think it was on there.
Okay, so let's go through the board in terms of cheapest to most expensive, right?
All right.
So the cheapest places, that would be the Big Hole in Kimberley, which made it onto the board.
That's the cheapest place?
Well, it's the brown color. Brown is okay. The most affordable.
Right, Kimberley.
Addo Elephant Park is also there. Then that is followed by the Durban Beachfront, also known as the Golden Mile. Florida Road, Morningside, Durban.
Right.
And Ushaka Marine World, they're classified as the light blue. Then pink is the Drakensberg, the Oyster Box Hotel, and the Kruger National Park. Mm-hmm. Then a little bit more expensive than that is the Cradle of Humankind, Gold Reef City, and the Union Buildings, which are all orange.
Okay.
Red is Nelson Mandela Square, 4th Avenue Parkhurst, and then Villa Gazi Street in Soweto. Then in yellow, Maboneng Precinct, St. Francis Bay, Robben Island, and then of course, all the most expensive locations are in the Western Cape. So green is Kirstenbosch Botanical Garden, Chapman's Peak Drive, and Boulders Beach. And then the most expensive location on the South African Monopoly Board will be the V&A Waterfront and Table Mountain.
All right.
And so that will be available from the 1st of November at, I suppose, all good toy stores, stationery stores.
Have they also got different little playing icons? You know, you used to have the shoe and...
I don't know. They don't say here what they did with the icons. Flex, did you see?
So I don't think they changed any of the icons because those are, well, iconic at the moment. They still got the wheelbarrow, the hat and all that. And I think they're only selling it at Hamleys, if I might be wrong, but I know that's where they initially selling it.
Oh, so I won't be able to walk into a Toys R Us and buy the Monopoly board.
Clearly, I'm not 100% sure. Oh, I'm 100% sure they're selling it at Hamleys.
All right. Oh. All right, very good. When we come back in a moment or two, we will have these amazing stars, Jessica Drake, Tanya Tate, in to talk to us about all of the world of adult films. We'll also talk about some of the stories in the news that involve Jessica Drake. I'm very, very excited to meet both of them. They're on next on Touch Central FM, cliffcentral.com, 5 minutes to 8.
Cliffcentral.com.